Hey, it's Johnny Jett. Welcome back to my podcast and YouTube channel. And today we are very blessed to have two doctors who are married, my old neighbors. Please say hello to Dr. Flora and Sanjay Sinha.
Hi.
Hey, Johnny.
Hello. Welcome. So these guys, by the way, were a godsend. Anytime that something happened, we just run across the street and say, help. You know, my son has an allergic reaction or whatever. They're always there and they know everything. So Flora is on Instagram at Dr._FloSinha.
Yep.
Actually, why don't you spell that out just so people can.
Yeah, it's Dr._Flo, F-L-O, Sinha, S-I-N-H-A.
And Sanjay is not on, I don't think. Or not on publicly.
I've become one with the Instagram.
Literally a week ago. 2 days ago.
Oh,
I made Instagram public.
Oh, I gotta follow you.
Sanjay's is.
What is it?
Do you remember? Yeah, exactly. This is a problem.
This is a bit. I do not know what it is.
Sanjay Sinha MD. That's what it is.
Yeah, Sinha it's at Sanjay Sinha MD.
Okay, well. You know what? You'll email me. I'll make a little post about this so people can find you guys. But real quick, let's have a little background so people know who you are and where you went to school and things like that. So, Flora, why don't you go first?
All right. So we're originally from Arizona, which is where we did our undergrad in medical school. We've been in California since residency. I am a internal medicine physician practicing for a little under 10 years. It's been great so far.
And you do emergency room stuff too, right?
No, just internal medicine. So I do outpatient medicine.
Okay. Did you ever do emergency room?
No. Care. Well, I may have gone to the urgent care to work a few shifts here and there. But
I thought, good to know. Yeah. And how about you, Sanjay?
So I am an interventional pediatric cardiologist, and I work at a children's hospital and at a large academic hospital. And I'm here to kind of learn about COVID myself. I'll give the pediatric perspective.
Okay. Well, that's why I really invited you guys on, because we both have kid the same age, basically. Yeah. And you guys are going on your first big trip in a month or whenever you're going. And, you know, I just want to know about, you know, what made you guys do it? Because I've been reading stuff about COVID-19, how, you know, if you've been vaccinated, which you guys are doctors and you've been vaccinated, but is it still safe to take your child? And that's our big thing, is we're worried about, you know, I guess this B117 is alarming rates with kids who are young. And I think, Sanjay, you told me offline that you've been seeing a little bit rise. Is that true?
Right. Right. So I think the first thing to just make sure people are aware of is that there's a lot of media attention to adults dying of COVID. And there's a lot of things I've heard about, kids aren't affected. So number one, kids are affected. They get infected at the same rates. Luckily, the majority of kids just have some symptoms or even no symptoms at all, and they get better and they recover. But what we have seen in the pediatric community, as first described a year ago in March, so the entire time we knew about COVID, about a month or two, we started seeing this, is something called MISC, or this multi-system inflammatory condition associated with COVID, where a kid will get infected with COVID, recover, and about 2 to 4 weeks later, come back with severe abdominal pain or respiratory symptoms, high fevers, what we call this inflammatory process, and need to get admitted and get specific medications to calm the immune system down. If that doesn't happen, what we see as pediatric cardiologists is it starts to affect the coronary arteries, much like another condition we know called Kawasaki syndrome, where the coronary arteries get dilated and they get diseased. And if they're not treated, they continue to get dilated. So I follow several kids who were unlucky enough to get this early on when we didn't know much about COVID and MISC. And they're unfortunately having some of the sequelae, needing to be on blood thinners their entire life because their coronaries are dilated. Luckily, we know a lot more about it. And when the second we see it, we admit them, we treat them appropriately. But the bottom line is it needs to be known that if you have a kid, they're not immune to the effects of COVID. There is always a chance. And so no matter what you do, you should be protecting them with masks, hand sanitizer, washing hands, all that kind of stuff.
So, and if they do come down with those symptoms, like you just mentioned, or even 2 to 4 weeks later, you know, bring them in. And absolutely. I mean, does every doctor know this, or they're going to be like, oh, the kid's fine? I mean, that's what I worry about. So how can you tell them, say, listen, this is what I think, this is what's wrong?
Yeah, I think most pediatricians, this has been the biggest thing in news in the last 1 year. And we're pretty attuned to this. And bottom line is, if you're having high fevers more than 5 days, regardless of whether you had COVID or not, that's not normal. And so you should be getting your kids checked out.
I see. Okay. That's good to know. And so you guys are going on your first trip to Hawaii, first plane trip in over a year, correct? Or you've been on planes?
Yeah. No, we have not been on a plane since
Vietnam.
Yeah. Since January of 2020, we got a trip in before the shutdown, and we had gone to Vietnam, had the time of our lives there, and then came home, and within literally a couple of, not even a week or so, all this happened. So kind of incredible, but we're grateful that we had that last trip.
Right. Well, it actually would not have been a bad place to stay if you had your daughter with you. Vietnam has done an amazing job. I think they're ranked as second in the world for treating COVID or keeping it out.
Good point.
So, so what are you going to do when you go to Hawaii? I mean, are you booking special seats? Are you, you know, certain hotels? Are you just making sure that the hotel, you know, when you get into the room, you're going to open the window if you can, but if you can't, I mean, what are you worried about?
So for us, I think kind of rewinding back a little bit, we initially decided on a trip to a place where we knew that had strict guidelines, low rates, low variant rate as well. We wanted to book it in a time frame where we were confident that Sanjay and I both would be vaccinated. Right. Now, our daughter obviously is not, she is under 12, she's also been in school in one form or another, either through a pod or through her hybrid program since August. And so we're pretty confident that in her skills and also wearing a mask, keeping it on and trying to keep her hands off of her face. And she's just as diligent as we are with sanitizing and social distancing. So we also looked at her ability to follow directions. And because it's, you know, she's been doing that for such a long time, we felt confident that we can take a trip. So that was step number one. And then two, we decided to go to Ko'olina in Oahu. And it was just an area that we knew was a little less crowded, a little more remote. It's not Waikiki, right, where I think most of the tourists go, and has a private beach. And so I think that also kind of gave us a little more.
Right. We also, you know, we found out that the hotel was going to be at reduced capacity, and you know, had enough information on their website about how they're mitigating. I think as long as the place is imposing certain things and you feel as though they understand the risk of COVID and they're not just brushing it off, I think psychologically you feel better that, you know, they're paying attention to those things, and the rest is on. So. Mm-hmm.
And how will you get from the airport to the hotel?
Oh, in Hawaii.
I was going to ask you, John.
not LAX. I'll be happy to.
So we will be renting a car.
Oh, you are? Okay. Yes. I think that's the safest way, correct? Than taking any kind of Ubers or whatever you're going to take.
Yeah. And if it were just us two, I think we would have been fine taking an Uber. But with our daughter, I think it's just safer, and we have a little more autonomy, a little more control as far as sanitation and just transportation.
Gotcha. What kind of mask is your daughter wearing?
So she will be wearing a cloth mask, but with the current guidelines saying that double masking may be better, I will be inserting a surgical mask. I'm just cutting it and inserting it into her mask. So the cloth mask that she has the ability to insert an extra filter.
Okay.
So that way she will be protected. And then we will probably, even though we're both vaccinated, you know, even with vaccinations, your risk reduction is not 100%. So even with, you know, the 5% potential chance of us contracting COVID and transmitting it, we will also be double masking in the same manner.
I was saying the hope is that, you know, some of these new studies are looking at the transmissibility of COVID, and hopefully it proves to be much less, significantly less.
Significantly less. At least a prelim study showed that if you are vaccinated, your risk of contracting and transmitting COVID goes down by a lot, which is very reassuring. Still not enough studies or not enough data to set it as a guideline, but the CDC guidelines have been moving towards that, where it's safer to get together in small groups if you are vaccinated.
And are you worried about these variants? Do you think there's going to be a huge surge like some health experts believe in a month from now, especially from what's going on in Miami and all these spring breakers?
Yeah, we were actually just talking about that in the car, because the unvaccinated population still has the ability to become infected and transmit the virus. As far as the variants go, so far, all three vaccines are effective against all of the variants that we know of or that are prevalent, including the UK variant that you had mentioned earlier. So from that standpoint, we're okay. And then I also did look at Hawaii's numbers from a variant perspective, and again, very low. We're at a higher variant level here in California compared to a lot of the other states.
So do you think we'll be okay? We'll not follow, countries like, France, Germany, Italy, India, Thailand. I mean, a lot of these countries now are seeing these huge surges because we're getting a good portion of people with the vaccine or what?
Yeah, I think we agree on the fact that we, as of right now, the US has plenty of vaccinations to go around and vaccinate everyone that would like to be vaccinated. And as far as the rate continues, as far as the vaccinations in arms, I think we will be okay, but we can't predict anything.
I think the problem is people are looking at this as if it's some magical box that no one understands, when it's simply numbers. If you have an infection rate and you have a virus that infects at a very high rate, the only way you're going to protect things is if you have a way to block the virus from getting infected with somebody, or you don't have a virus that will be infected. And so you inoculate an entire population, you're great. You're not going to have the death rates that you have. So if we can get to a high inoculation rate, then we'll be fine. In the meantime, when we don't have that, we have 13% of the population, I think something like that, inoculated. Until then, you have to work the other side of things, which is the mask, the social distancing, keeping people from getting infected with that. And that's going to be the key. So when we see what we see in Miami and other things and during spring break, it's going to happen. You're going to have a little bit of spikes in these areas. Mm-hmm. And it's just about how badly it's going to happen. We saw over the Christmas break, a huge surge in California. When I was on service in the hospital, we would maybe do one or two MISC consults. In January, February, when you're on service, you were doing two or three consults on MISC every day. It was the infectious disease group in the children's hospital had to split up, had everybody on call the entire time because it was that busy. So it's just natural, progressions of what we see the weeks before.
And just to add on,
please.
Just to add on to that, to what Sanjay was saying, is that if we can get enough of the population vaccinated to the point where we reduce the sheer numbers of people going into the hospital with severe disease, that's the point. If a group of people could potentially get over this virus with just simple cold symptoms, that's okay, right? So the goal isn't to eliminate the complete infection itself, because it's probably near impossible, but is really to reduce numbers in order to not overwhelm the healthcare system, which is what happened here in California in December, January.
Right. And did you guys get it, by the way, or any of your friends?
We knew family members, thank goodness, knock on wood. No one in our household became infected, but we had family members, we had friends that did contract COVID, and
colleagues as well.
Yeah. And colleagues as well. Yeah.
You're around it all day long. So how did you avoid it? Are you wearing N95s or something else? Or what are you doing?
You want to do it in the hospital?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is if you have an understanding of how it works, you know how to prevent it from happening. So in the hospital, the second you come in, you're screened, you have screening at home, questions you have before you come in. If you answer any of these questions correctly, you're a screen fail, you can't come in to work. at the hospital, you're temp checked and you're given a mask. And then that mask doesn't come off until you're leaving the hospital. You throw it away.
And that's an N95.
It's not an N95.
No.
In certain places, parts of the hospital, infectious disease wards, ICUs, anesthesia, high-risk procedural areas, they're wearing N95s. But this is for everybody walking around the hospital. When you're in a procedure, for example, times where there's a risk for getting the virus out, aspirated into the air, we have certain protocols. For example, when they're intubating a patient before a procedure, like putting an airway, anyone in the room has to be wearing an N95 mask or you have to leave the room. And that goes for any elective procedure. So we've figured out certain things to make it safe for people, even if they don't have COVID. So if you don't have COVID or have a history of COVID and you're getting a procedure, we still do the same thing. Okay. If you're going to a COVID room, you don an entire sequence of protective PPE. And when you come off, you do it in a safe way. So we've all gotten better at doing that correctly, I think, as an institution, as a community. And it's done very well to protect people. The places people are getting infected that I've seen are not in the places in the hospital where people are like, oh, it's all around you. It's it's places you don't expect where maybe you've let down your guard a little bit, or there are people who are saying, oh, it should be okay. And suddenly you have a party of 10 people who got together, one person was infected, and they now all have COVID. So that's what I've seen. And it might be different in different areas, but by and large, I don't know any colleague of mine who got it in the hospital while maintaining appropriate PPE and precautions.
And Flo, have you seen the same thing? People.
Yeah, those are the cases that I think we heard about when healthcare professionals were contracting the virus, were in areas where they were unable to protect themselves. So way back in the beginning, March, April of last year, especially in areas like New York, where they didn't have enough personal protective equipment, you saw infection rates in healthcare professionals. I think our hospitals here in our state did a really good job of having us well equipped. On the outpatient side, where I work, we are screening everyone. So employees and patients. So you get screened through a questionnaire regarding your symptoms or if you have any symptoms. And you also get a temperature check. You also have to wear a new mask when you enter the clinic. And that goes for everybody. You cannot wear your own mask. You can put a fresh new mask on top of your old mask if you'd like. We do not have N95 masks in our clinic. Our urgent care physicians, ER physicians, those that are at higher risk of exposure will have N95 and gowns. And same thing, like Sanjay said, my mask doesn't come off the entire day. I've limited my interaction within 6 feet. Of my patients. We don't do any breathing treatments inside our clinic since the pandemic started, because the virus can be contracted through aerosolized air, and that's what nebulizers carry. So I think it really is a testament to science that masking, social distancing, and strict sanitation protocols work. I've been in clinic since March. I even was working in the COVID clinics for a few weeks in the beginning to help out, and knock on wood, everyone stayed healthy because we did have equipment. We were all following protocols.
But you're not wearing N95 at work.
Mm-mm.
So just regular surgical mask?
I have a surgical mask and I do wear a face shield.
Okay.
For eye protection.
And will you wear a face shield or goggles on the plane?
Yeah, I forgot to add that. I don't know about our daughter. I need to look into comfortable gear. The thing with kids, or at least our child, that I worry about is touching her face. And so it just introduces new ways to get germs into the eyes and mouth and nose. And so if something is uncomfortable, a mask or an eye shield, I'm afraid she's going to continue to...
I see.
You know, mess with it. So I need to look into kid-friendly eye protection. But.
So you guys are going to wear double masks, just regular surgical masks, no N95s on the plane, and a face shield.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't aware we were going to do the face shield, but.
Oh, yeah. Sense. Forgot to tell you about that.
I kind of do what she says.
So are you worried about getting it through your eyes?
I mean, there are studies saying that it's transmissible. I mean, this is a very thin membrane. And so if you touch a surface and scratch your eye or touch your face, you know, it's possible.
So is it more for you not to touch your face or other besides that, or are you worried about the virus, you know, coming through and hitting you in the eye?
It's more about us being human and touching our face.
I see. Yeah.
The hope is that we're not in an environment where people are unmasked, coughing and sneezing, which you're exposed to the face. And
right.
I think that, to me, that is the biggest thing, to make sure, you know, we haven't been in an airport in a year. I don't know if the airport's, you know, enforcing these things. I'm told they are. We haven't been in some of these places, these waiting areas. Mm-hmm. And if we're in a waiting area, we see people who are unmasked, we're not going to be around that. We're going to be isolated in areas. So I think the eye protection, things like that, are more important when you are in those kinds of places.
And so what are you worried most about the flight? Are you worried about the person next to you having COVID or the person behind you not wearing a mask or someone coughing?
I'm worried about the transit. I think the planes, they've shown a decent amount of studies in terms of how the airflow and things like that have protected things, but it's more, you know, getting on and off the plane and in public.
Being in airports.
Right, crowded areas and airports.
Lots of touch points when we go through airports. I mean, just checking in and luggage. I think a lot of things are electronic now, but right. Still, we do know that our airports and the airports in Hawaii have been very strict just because, right. You know, they want to protect everybody that's coming in and out.
For sure. And I just lost my train of thought, but I was going to say, what was I going to say? Ask you. I just totally had it and I blew it. But by the way, so a company called Well Before sent a bunch of KN95 masks.
Oh.
So do you recommend those? And by the way, I can give you one for your daughter.
For the kid ones. Interesting. Yes. So according to the CDC, KN95 or N95 masks do provide a slightly higher percentage protection compared to a single surgical mask, but almost similar protection when it comes to double masking versus one N95 or KN95.
Gotcha. Actually, I remember what I was going to ask you. So When you go to the grocery store, are you worried about catching COVID there? And do you just speed through or what do you do?
So, So I've seen and done enough visits with patients where I'm convinced they had gotten it at the grocery store, one of our family members included. So basically since March, we have been getting all of our groceries delivered, or we've been doing the drive pickup orders. I think Sanjay went into Trader Joe's maybe a total of 4 or 5 times in the last year. Wow. We have not stepped foot into Costco or really? Any.
Because I've done all of that.
Well, and look, a lot of people do, and that's okay. Running errands is essential. Getting food for your family is essential, but it's really important that everyone continues to stay hypervigilant, just because same thing at the grocery store, there are a lot of touch points. And then a lot of us keep lists or call our spouses or partners or friends or roommates on our phone and, hey, do we need X, Y, and that the surface life of the virus is still up in the air. And There have been mixed studies, but I still think it there's a lot of touch points and a lot of opportunities to contract the virus.
So would you wear a face shield going to Costco or Trader Joe's?
You know, I stepped foot into Trader Joe's for the first time a couple of weeks ago and I did not wear a face shield. I was not with my daughter. I was by myself and I didn't touch my phone. I literally was hands on my cart and whatever I was getting.
I'm talking to my wife and they're saying, hey, do we need this?
Exactly.
So what's wrong though? What are you worried about? Like me touching my eyes or nose?
Yeah. So what I normally have seen, or especially maybe it was more so last year, I think people are a little bit better now. Especially when I would go pick up my groceries, I would see the line outside of any grocery store. And either people aren't correctly wearing their masks or they're touching a surface for whatever reason and then adjusting their mask, mm-hmm. which kind of defeats the purpose. And or they're touching their phone, which had fallen on the ground and they, I don't know, put it in their pocket and then they mess with their hair. But we honestly touch our faces so much unconsciously. I, again, after this year, I think people are a little more vigilant about it, but We're human. It happens.
And do you think people will be wearing masks next year, a year from today?
I hope so. I really think masks did a number on decreasing the amount of flu that we saw, just right. regular cold. Granted, kids weren't in school, right. but I think masking and distancing and sanitizing really decreased all the other numbers as well. Right.
I mean, so do you think it could be here for forever, masks, or and on planes? And listen, I would not be opposed to it, because one of my biggest pet peeves before this whole pandemic, when I was flying all the time, is people, I would see people coughing or sneezing yes. without covering their mouth. It would blow my yes. mind.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not opposed to it, but I'm just curious.
I'm not sure if them from a like governmental mandate standpoint, I'm not right. sure if we'll be around, but I have a feeling that people will be choosing to wear masks Agreed. More often or more frequently, right. especially with travel or in unknown areas compared to previous years.
Yeah. I mean, I've always packed masks with me when I would travel. I mean, you know, going to Asia, which you guys yeah. have been many times, you've seen it and you know it. And, you know, so if I felt sick, I would put a mask on, or if I thought the person next to me was sick, I'd put a mask on. I don't know mm-hmm. if it helped, but at least it felt like it helped.
Yeah. I mean, even in our clinics, if we had mild colds that were mild, or we hadn't spiked a fever, you know, we would slap on a mask and sanitize extra carefully and go on with our work. I mean, that's been kind of our norm as far as travel goes. I mean, especially in East Asia, that, again, that's their norm is to wear masks around traveling and just regular transport within the countries.
Right. right. So would you guys go to Asia right now?
It might be safer there.
Again, it's not the countries themselves. It's the travel
okay.
Portion of it. Again, there's so many touch points when it comes to traveling, and especially internationally. I don't think I would right now, but.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is until we have a vaccine for the kids, we're probably going to be fairly limited in the amount of traveling we're doing. We're testing the waters with Hawaii
yeah.
after a lot of conversation about whether we could or not. And we kind of just explored the route and found it to be okay. But I think that the good news is the companies are doing the trials on younger kids.
Yeah.
And hopefully once we get full protection, then we'll be a little bit more liberal. But
how about a road trip? Would you take a road trip with your daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And stay at a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. We've done a few road trips over the pandemic and we rented out Airbnbs mostly. Okay. We actually did go visit our family in Arizona back in September, where the rates were relatively low. But even there, in Arizona, there's much more space. So within the household, we all distanced and masked, including our daughter, away from our parents. And it was just, again, from a mental standpoint, it was nice to just see them, talk to them and interact with them, but we still kept our distance, hand sanitizers right. everywhere in both households, and our in-laws and my parents. And that included
Gia. They didn't hug each other.
Well, the grandparents hugged the granddaughter because that was really tough. But for us, no, we all kept our distance.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, because you know, that's one of my questions. I mean, my dad's 92. I haven't seen him in over a year. And he's been fully vaccinated. I have not, but you know, I was planning to go see him next month. Do you think it's a good idea in South Florida, which is, you know, kind of like the wild, wild west?
Right. That's tough because all we have heard about Florida right now have been some friends and colleagues have gone down yeah. there. And it, you know, again, it comes back to the idea of that. If you feel as though you can be in a situation where people are taking the steps to mitigate COVID spread, then I think you can have faith in your ability to do that as well.
Right.
But the stories I've heard down there have been that there's a lot of anti-masking. There's a lot of people who feel it's still not real, et cetera. Totally. And so I would, you know, you just have to make that decision yourself. For you, I mean, the biggest risk in this situation would be, you know, yourself and your dad. You know, your folks, the folks at home. Luckily, the kids are still smaller risk, but you just never know. There's nothing in terms of MISC for kids. There's nothing you can look at a kid and say, oh, this child will get MISC mm-hmm. if they have COVID, or this child won't. You can have found any way to predict that.
I see.
And so it's just this, you know, this probability, this possibility.
Yeah. I guess I just have to do FaceTime. It's and I bought these $31 flights on American Airlines between LA and Miami, and I could on a 777 I can get upgraded to first class, lie flat seat.
I mean, I might just go for you. I'll let you know how it is.
But listen, my sister's down in Florida, and you know, a few months ago when the rates were high, I FaceTimed her. She was in a bar. I'm out walking, and she's like, "Hey." She showed me to her friends, and her friends were like, "You're walking with a mask on outside?" She goes, "You must be from California." And, then literally a week later, my sister called. So guess what? All my friends just got COVID who were at the bar. I said, "Can I have their phone numbers? I just want to have a talk with them."
Snap a picture with my mask.
That's the biggest thing is there are just there's certainties. If you have COVID and you're next to somebody and you're not masked, they will get COVID. You just have to assume that'll happen. And if you don't know if somebody has it, then you're rolling the dice, and it's very much so not in your favor if you're doing it that way. So I think people need to be on the message that this is not a political thing. This is not like, oh, it's us versus them, or like LA folks and California folks. This is science. You know, if this was some other virus in its peak and we knew how it was transmitted, we would do the same mitigating things. HIV, once we learn how HIV was transmitted, we impose certain things to keep HIV from being transmitted. It works with any kind of thing. Once you learn the science and how it's transmitted, you put in the blocks to keep it from getting infected.
Right. And as far as risk goes, as far when it comes to transmission, you know, there's still the same guidelines. If you're within 6 feet in an indoor setting without masks for longer than 10 to 15 minutes next to somebody, if one of them is infected, the risk of contracting COVID is much higher than if you kept your distance with masks, stayed outdoors. So if you want to do the risk versus a benefit of a quick hug, masked, sanitized, protected, I mean, I think people need to kind of weigh that risk versus benefit ratio versus, you know, going to a bar.
I mean, I would go hug my dad. If I was there, I would definitely hug my dad. But I would go in, I do a quick hug, and I would, you know, breathe the other way and have a mask on. But I just think it's just natural. And
And I don't think anyone would fault you.
Right.
But I just don't, I would hate to, you know, obviously get him sick or bring it back and get my family sick. So it sounds like I'm not going to go.
The good thing with the vaccines, at least from the data that we know from the trials, all of the vaccines eliminated your risk for death from COVID. And the ranges were anywhere from, depending on which vaccine we're talking about, 73% to 95% reduced risk of moderate to severe disease, which is huge. So if we can, you know, decrease that risk with vaccines, a quick hug, I think should be okay if he's fully vaccinated. And it's been at least 2 weeks since his second dose.
It has. How about if I've been fully vaccinated?
Can I mean, we've been hugging our friends and family members who have been fully vaccinated and have been after that protection. So,
Again,
risk versus benefit. It felt good to our family members.
I bet. Have you shaken someone's hand in a year?
You know, for the first time yesterday, I think.
Did you?
For the first time yesterday, it was strange. Again, we were all vaccinated. We had just sanitized. And it was very, very strange to shake someone's hand because I just haven't done it in such a long time.
Yeah, I honestly think that the days of shaking hands are probably behind us until this is under control.
I have not shaken someone's hand in a year, and I sometimes have a nightmare. By the way, I wake up like, oh my God, I just shook this person's hand. But, you know, I would go to these conferences, especially like in New York in January. And I remember last year we were in New York, and they had a guest speaker from Wuhan. And he was like, there's a virus in where I just came from in Wuhan. I never even heard of Wuhan. And I was like, I'm not going to go near you. And but I mean, he must have spread it. I mean, he's coming from Wuhan. But the point is, I always carried hand sanitizer in my pocket. And people thought I was crazy every time you go to meet these people, it's like speed dating. You're shaking the person's hand. Yeah. And I was just under the table, you know. I thought I was being sly, but they probably smelled the hand sanitizer. But I would, or I go right to the bathroom and wash my hands. And because the year before that I went and I got the flu really bad. So anyway, I'm not opposed to having masks on while you're flying and not shaking hands. Fist bumps.
Fist bumps are good.
Or elbows. Yeah. Or even the ankle touch, you know, whatever.
I will say, you know, I am impressed. Like, I work with kids every day, so I'm less with the adult side of things, but I am impressed at how well kids have taken all of these things. I think it's, you know, parents can be one thing, but if the teacher says something, they listen. Mm-hmm. And so the ability to keep masks on, the mm-hmm. ability to wash hands, keep hands clean, elbow bumps, it was all very natural. Just the next thing that they're being told by someone to do. So I think that whole process, that whole imposition of these things are going to be better for kids in general from getting infected. We have a particular virus called RSV that we see every year during the season of RSV, which is the fall to the early spring. And kids who I see who have congenital heart disease oftentimes get very sick. They come into the mm-hmm. hospital, they can die from it. And we haven't seen any RSV this year. It's been really nice to not have to deal with that. It's all of these other things that kind of come into play with influenza and things like that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll benefit from this degree of kind of lack, not shaking hands, masking, washing hands.
Yeah. Even the flu numbers had gone down significantly. And vaccine rates for influenza went up, strangely enough. More people wanted to get vaccinated to protect themselves against the flu. If for whatever reason, you know, they got COVID, they would at least be protected against a double infection. And then the masking and the distancing, sanitize, all of that, I think, contributed to low flu and common cold numbers.
Right. I got to tell you, we were just at the Santa Barbara Zoo yesterday or the day before, and every single kid, I might've saw one kid or possibly two without just having it down. Mm-hmm. For the most part, 99% of the kids, 99.9 probably, are wearing them. And they're just impressive. I remember the first time I saw someone wearing a kid wearing a mask right when when this whole pandemic started, and I started crying. I was just like, I could not believe. Like, I was like, what is this? What are we going into? It felt like we're going into a war.
Yeah.
But if the kids are our future, I think we're going to be okay.
Right.
I hope so. I mean, they're just so resilient. That's one thing that has been so refreshing during this last year. They've been so adaptable, so resilient, just watching our daughter go through all of these changes, starting kindergarten virtually, and really flourishing. And I know it's different for every child, but just the simple ask of masking, sanitizing, distancing, and sticking to it has been really incredible to see. You're right. It does give us a little bit of hope.
Well, thank you guys for taking the time. I know we're going to get some negative comments, guaranteed. And for those people who are going to write negative comments, listen, I just got a nasty one yesterday. I just read it. And that person's like, you fell for the trap for all this masks, all this BS. And you know what? I told them, I said, listen, next time you or your loved ones having surgery, make sure you tell the surgeon not to wear a mask. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. Yep. Or wash their hands or gown up.
So,
and the tough thing is it's good to have conversations, right? When you have a conversation with somebody who doesn't agree with you, you're able to come to a commonality that you both are fine people, but you have these different opinions. But the bottom line is truth has to come out. And if truth comes out and you're having these conversations, it works. But
we'll see. For some reason, a lot of people have lost the truth, but fortunately we have not. So thank you for taking the time and, have a great trip. Aloha. I'm wearing my shirt for you guys.
I love it. Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Oh, by the way, where can they find you one more time? Dr. Flo and actually Sanjay, now that you're on, you still don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Sanjay Sinha MD.
Okay.
So I'm predominantly on Instagram at Dr_FloSinha. And then I actually will be starting a YouTube page here in the next couple of months. So stay tuned and a new website and all that good stuff coming up. So lots of good things.
You send me the stuff and I'll update the article.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We love you, Johnny.
All right. I love you guys too. See you later.